Sports Time Radio. Come on. All sports, all the time.
It's 5 o'clock on Friday, and hey, since you can't go anywhere, I hope you're listening to the Sports Time Radio, of course. And I did say it was Friday.
Start spreading the news.
Well, there you go. That means Schomburg Stu is here. Hi, Stu.
I'm doing okay, and hope everybody else is doing well who's listening to the show tonight.
So, and if you'd like to call in and talk to Stu and I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something popping up there sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you want to hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, we'd greatly appreciate it. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we don't have Stu on Twitter yet, but feel free to reach out to me at BurkeTime, and I will pass any messages along to Stu, as you know. So, all right, Stu, you know, we got another day, and it looks like we have another different type of plan for Major League Baseball. This one has nothing to do with the amount of games or where they would play the games, but how the divisions would align. And I don't know, have you seen this one?
No, you'll have to clue me in. So they would change the alignment of the divisions?
Yeah, for 1 year and 1 year only. The way they have it set up is teams would return to their spring training sites for 3 weeks, which would include exhibition games. I weren't sure if they were going to do that. Then the opening of the regular season, they would play a schedule with what is described here as a wholly different divisional opponents. And here's what they got. We have six divisions. I'll run through them all for you. They have the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League, because they're dividing these up by where they play spring training. So the Grapefruit North would be Yankees, Phillies, Blue Jays, Tigers, and Pirates. The Grapefruit South would be Red Sox, Twins, Braves, Rays, and Orioles. The Grapefruit East would be Nationals, Astros, Mets, Cardinals, and Marlins. Then over to the Cactus League. The Cactus League Northwest would be Brewers, Padres, Mariners, Rangers, and Royals. The Cactus League West would be Dodgers, White Sox, Reds, Indians, and Angels. And then the Cactus League Northeast would feature the A's, the Rockies, the Diamondbacks, the Giants, and, of course, your Chicago Cubs.
Well, that's an interesting scenario.
Yeah, you know, oddly, I can't quite understand why both the Yankees are and the Red Sox are in the Grapefruit League, but somehow they couldn't keep them in the same division.
Yeah, it's a puzzle.
So,
and
I would hate to be in the Grapefruit League South with the Red Sox, Twins, Braves, and Rays. The Orioles may not win a game.
Yeah.
You know, and then when you kind of get to the bottom here, the Cactus League, the Cubs would actually move into what would be an easier division than what they are in now. You know, the A's would probably give them some trouble, but other than that, the Giants, the Diamondbacks, and the Rockies shouldn't really be an issue. They basically gave the Dodgers a division like they kind of do in the NL West anyways, because while the Reds are improved, they're not as good as the Dodgers. You never know what you're going to get out of the Angels. The Indians have been trying to rebuild for 3 years, and the White Sox are still rebuilding. And then with the Northwest, the only challenge the Brewers would have to win the division would be the Rangers. So, I mean, that's a really weak side of what would be divided divisions. You know, I mean, these other divisions, with the exception of the Yankees, I mean, that East division has the Nationals, the Astros, the Mets, and the Cardinals. You know, if the Mets could ever get freaking healthy, they would contend. But those other three teams should be pretty good. The Marlins aren't going to beat anybody, but, you know, I guess you got to have a softy somewhere. So, yeah, I don't think I'd be happy if I was some of these teams.
No, and if this comes to pass, did they say how many games they would play for the they would count through the season?
No, well, there's no mention of games in this article. You know, I haven't seen anything on this. You know, like a lot of it is they haven't even really mentioned where they would play. The only thing they add here is that the DH would become universal for this year.
Now, I wonder if they would keep it permanently if they revert back to their normal schedule for the following year.
So, yeah, I'm sooner or later we know it's coming. The way they have it set up here, what they would say, they would play 12 games apiece against their new divisional opponents and 6 games apiece against the other teams in the state. There would be at least one doubleheader a night when all teams are scheduled to play because of the odd numbers of teams in each state. So that's what they're going with here.
Did they say anything about whether
yeah,
they're going to play in an empty stadium or would they have fans?
They haven't said that yet. What they describe here is the Cactus League, of course, would be played in Arizona, and the Grapefruit League would be played in Florida. The World Series would be utilizing what they call domed stadiums in late November. And this is just one of many options that, you know, we've heard from, you know, from baseball. You know, they had the All Arizona plan, which came out earlier this week. There's been good and bad with both of that. I haven't seen any reaction to this, but this is the first time this one has come out. And it doesn't look like, which would be interesting because they haven't done this in a long time now, there would be no Grapefruit Cactus League play against each other until the World Series. So basically there would be no interleague play.
Yeah, that's right. And I think you mentioned, though, but the Dodgers and Angels, for example, are in the same division under the new structure.
Yeah, they're the only teams that share a city that ended up in the same division. The Cubs and the White Sox, the Giants and the A's, well, they don't really share a city. I know they're close. But, you know, the Cubs, the White Sox, the Giants and the A's are on the same side in the Cactus League. But they're not, the A's and the Giants are in the same division. But, again, like I said, they don't share a city, and the Mets and the Yankees are both in the Grapefruit League, but they're in separate divisions as well. So, yeah, it's just the Dodgers and the Angels that we would see play each other in that scenario. But, yeah, I think they may have been able to do a better job of evening these divisions out.
You would think so. And would everybody have a say in the matter? Would there be any kind of a vote, or would it be something unilateral saying, this is how it's going to be for this year, and that's it?
I don't think they could do it without approval of the Players Association. I don't specifically know if there has to be a vote, but I believe, obviously the Players Association would have to sign off on it. And it does say here, as of right now, the plan is without fans.
Well, then the question enters into it, would the players have to wear masks during the game?
Yeah, you know, they haven't mentioned anything here. You know, the one thing they did say with the Arizona plan was they were going to allow the players to sit in the stands so they could stay 6 feet apart from each other. You know, of course, the issue becomes you can't keep the catcher 6 feet away from the batter, and you can't keep the first baseman 6 feet away from runners on first.
Yeah, that's the first thing.
So while you can work out, right, you can work out some of these problems, you know, eventually, and I know they were saying they would go with the robot umpire behind home plate so you wouldn't add the ump to that scenario. You know, I don't know if that would carry over into this plan. That was for the all Arizona plan. You know, it just, you know, it's obviously, that, you know, there are some logistics that are going to have to be worked out.
If they use a robot umpire behind a plate, what happens if there's a play at the plate?
Yeah. That I don't know. That they didn't address that. I guess one of the other umps would have to get there to make the call. So, you know, and the way they're looking at it here is they're saying that the games in Florida would begin at 11 a.m. Eastern time. So that would be 9 a.m. for you and I.
Yeah.
Yep. And then they would still have some games in prime time for the East Coast.
No,
and then the time slots
difference.
Would not, still
yeah, would,
two?
Between
okay,
you
so
and
time.
I would only be a one-hour yeah. difference between the East and Central. But there would be a three-hour
yeah,
difference
so 10,
between
12.
The East and the West Coast.
Yeah, and then the time slots would still permit the West Coast teams to play primetime games in Arizona. So but, yeah, and then they have an interesting thing here. I don't know how they would work this out. You know, when it comes to postseason, there's actually a suggestion of having a postseason tournament with all 30 teams. So I don't know if you would do single elimination. You know, I mean, that could be kind of interesting if the worst team managed to beat the best team in the first game.
Yeah.
Baltimore,
Detroit winning the first round game, that would be kind of an embarrassment to baseball, wouldn't it?
Right. You know, imagine the Marlins go out and they get a really well-pitched game and they knock off, you know, a Yankee team or a Red Sox team or a Twins team or even the Braves, since they're over there, that were supposed to be really good, you know, and it's just single game elimination. So...
Well, that would mean that the one loss record for this season would be meaningless then if they did it that way.
Yeah, if they did something like that. You know, they also mentioned that perhaps they would just add two more wild card teams, like they've talked about doing anyways. So, you know, the postseason, obviously, there's still some questions on how they would do it. And again, none of this is official. This was just another idea suggested that they could possibly go with to, you know, kind of get the season going. You know, because
right.
I know here yesterday, you know, our governor came on and mentioned he doesn't want to see gatherings of 50 or more people until July. So now, you know, we're looking at May and June without baseball in Chicago possibly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's,
so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're better off just canceling the whole season. But, of course, we don't want it to see it happening. But with this crazy scenarios that they're advocating, it really stretches the credulity of the game itself, it seems to me.
Yeah, well, you know, the tough part with canceling everything is they don't want to walk away from all that TV money.
No, of course.
You know, there's a lot of television money on the floor that, you know, they're giving away right now because, you know, they're not playing games.
You know, this is it sounds like a desperation move on baseball's part. The previous rumor I saw was that there would be a 100-game season played without fans.
Yeah, you know, there's been multiple ideas suggested, you know, no surprise. You know, it's difficult to really tell which ones are legit that they might actually go with and which ones just are, you know, something some fan threw up there that it caught a little wind, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, okay, they're going to do this. So.
Well, this scenario today, was this something that came out from actually Major League Baseball itself, or was it something just a rumor, an unfounded rumor?
No, this came out from Major League Baseball because they had Tony La Russa behind it commenting. So, you know, this was definitely an actual MLB consideration.
Well, it's this. If this happens, it will be the most unusual season in the history of baseball.
Yeah, you know, and on the odds side, it may also be one of the highest rated ones without fans having anything to do. You know, they'll probably tune in and watch baseball.
Yeah. I think the fans are in desperation mode already without any sports to watch on TV.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been difficult. You know, I can't sit through the older games. I can watch a little of it, but then I'm out. So, you know, just one of those things.
It's kind of difficult to watch the old games when you know the outcome, but it is kind of exciting to watch the 96 Bulls on their way to win the NBA championship because it doesn't. That's something that hasn't happened here for a long time. Of course, that was the year they won 72 and lost 10.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, we'll have to see if and what baseball can come up with. But I'm assuming, you know, sooner or later they're going to come up with, with something. I don't know who's going to like it. You know, there's going to be plenty of people out there that hate it, but that's just kind of how it goes.
Well, the thing is, will the officials in the governments, in the state governments, local areas, go along with this idea?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that'll be of, you know, interest to see, you know, where they are at certain points or, you know, how close things are to getting back on their feet, you know, on if they'll allow this or not.
Of course, we can have a couple of kids do some of those major league video games and all the teams and see how that fantasy would work out. But yeah, it's dire. It's really this season is critical right now. And if this were to come apart, come to be, I mean, it would seem to be a lot of structure and work involved to get this into play. And when would it start? Like you said, would it start in August? And we don't even know how many games they're talking about yet either.
Yeah, you know, and obviously, you know, these would be the pieces that would come out as they actually decided what they were going to do, you know, when they were going to play, how they were going to go about playing it. So, you know, again, it was just a suggested idea. And I almost wonder if they're throwing suggestions out, kind of waiting to see how people react to them. Cause you know, the Arizona one got a lot of negative responses, you know, not only from the media, but from a couple players, you know, and like Dan and I were joking, there were a lot of complaints for the media. And I found this kind of funny that they were talking about how they would have to take the players away from their wives and their families for, you know, 3 or 4 months at a time. And I was kind of like, well, you know, they've been cooped up 24/7 for how long? You got to wonder how many players might look at that as a positive. So,
yeah, unfortunately that might come to that, but boy, that's a weird situation if this thing actually happens, and we'll have to see how it plays in the next few weeks.
Yeah. So, you know, and then the other baseball story that came out is all the current values of the franchises came out. And no surprise, the New York Yankees are considered the most valuable franchise at $5 billion. Then it's Dodgers, Red Sox. The Cubs come in fourth, and the Giants round out the top five. The other local team here, the White Sox, come in at 14th. And the only team they have ranked at under $1 billion is the Miami Marlins, who allegedly are worth $980 million.
Well, that's not a surprise, and I'm sure that Baltimore came in pretty low on the list, too. And well, currently Detroit, I guess. Well, Detroit's always been a valuable franchise, but with the poor teams they've had over the last few years, I'm sure their value has diminished quite a bit.
Yeah, well, actually, surprisingly, Baltimore is 18. The bottom teams here, the Kansas City Royals are 29. The Tampa Bay Rays are 28. I'm surprised with this one. The Cincinnati Reds are listed at 27. And then the rounding out the bottom five here, the Oakland A's are at 26.
It's surprising that some of those teams that are ranked that low are actually – bona fide contenders, too.
Yeah, it is. You know, I mean, the Rays have been a playoff team, you know, multiple times, but I understand they don't get anybody to go watch their games, so that's going to, you know, decrease their value. You know, the A's are in a similar situation. While they've had good teams, their stadium is a dump, and you wonder if when they move into their new stadium, if their value will go up. I think that's 3 or 4 years away, though.
Yeah, that's
down the road. So, it's kind of understandable. And, I mean, the Royals have been a perpetual loser with the exception of that World Series run for how many years now? I mean, literally 20 or 30 years. So it's no surprise that they're down there.
Yeah, I was surprised the Cubs ranked that high. That wouldn't have happened a few years ago, but I guess since the Ricketts took over, their value has certainly increased. Obviously, winning the World Series helped a lot.
Yeah, and, you know, they made a lot of improvements to the park.
Yeah,
so,
they did.
You know, that's going to factor in as well. You know, and then, it's clearly obvious. I mean, the bigger cities are where the value for these teams are. I mean, we're looking at New York, Los Angeles, Boston, and Chicago, and then San Francisco. So it's major market baseball teams. And obviously the Red Sox and the Cubs have the history with the parks. That's going to help their value even more because, you know, those are almost guaranteed draws. People want to come and see those parks, even if you're not any good.
Yeah, that's right. There was a thing on the line a few months ago. The top parks in baseball, and Boston came in first, and the Cubs came in second.
Yeah, that's no surprise. They're easily one and two out of anything else that's out there.
Do you think there's some other parks that would rank fairly high because they may not have good teams and in a small market base, but some of the parks are hardly thought of in terms of beauty. I mean, Kansas City is supposed to be a very nice park, and Cincinnati and some of the other newer ones, too.
So, yeah, and, you know, that's the thing. I mean, you know, you get some of these newer parks, and, you know, they're nice, but it's still, you know, it's not like watching a game at the older parks.
No, there's a certain nostalgia value that can't be replicated by the newer ones.
You know, yeah, and that's always, you know, that's always tough to do. But, you know, they are nice. I mean, obviously, you know, we're not going to come out here and say they're bad parks. But, yeah, it's just kind of how baseball should probably go, I think.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, it'll be nice to get the baseball rolling again, but I have my doubts. It won't be for a while. And what do you think? The earliest will be what? July? June, July? If anything happens?
You know, You know, I think it's just going to kind of all depend on how things play out. I mean, if they're, you know, if they're talking about a 3-week spring training and we can get going at the end of this month, you know, then we're, you know, we're started at, you know, the end of May.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen myself, but maybe if we see a marked improvement in the spread of the virus, we can start talking about possibly starting the season in June. That would be the best. That would be the best case scenario for baseball, I think, if they could start in June.
Yeah, you know the tough thing with it is, you know, we know so little about what's actually going on with this thing. I mean, you know, could they find something tomorrow that clears it up? Of course, but then again, they might not find something until June or July that clears it up. So, you know, we're really, it's really just limbo. It's hard to say, you know, what's what. You just got to kind of sit back and wait and play it by, you know, play it by ear.
And if baseball does resume under these conditions, would that affect the NHL and NBA? Would they actually try to start their seasons again, or would they just toss it for the year and that's it? Rating wise, it would be hard for them to compete with baseball.
Yeah, see, I honestly don't believe it's worth the while for the NBA or the NHL to come back, but they're both going to. Whether, you know, the only way they're not going to is if this runs into when their next season would start. You know, and like the NHL, there's actually a new article on the NHL that they're looking into getting neutral site playoff pitches from other cities, because as they've been looking at this, they're realizing that some of their playoff teams aren't going to be able to play games at home because their arenas have been, you know, booked for other events. So they're out there looking for other ways to play this season. You know, like Gary Bettman came out earlier in the week, it was Monday or Tuesday, and, you know, they've mentioned a couple scenarios. And like one of the one, like I didn't realize they still have 189 regular NHL season games to go. He was talking like it doesn't look like they're going to play those, but they're going to go right into the playoffs. So, you know, and I would guess the NBA would probably do the same thing, even though they haven't said anything, because I think there's more NBA games left than NHL games. And, you know, like I honestly don't care. Even if the NBA comes back, I'm not going to watch any of it. You know, I don't watch it when it's supposed to be played. There's no way I'm going to watch it in what's supposed to be the off season. You know, it's a horrible sport as far as I'm concerned, because they don't do the things that actually make the game what it should be. So I could honestly care less if they come back, but you know, they're both going to, because again, we get into the point where they want that TV money, and, you know, and especially if they can put fans in the seats, the owners are going to want that money as well. So they're going to play as many games as they physically possibly can, because, you know, it's all, you know, no matter what anybody says, it's all about money.
Yeah. And if they do come back, are they also considered playing in the empty arena also?
You know, I haven't heard that out of either of those leagues yet. But, you know, I mean, obviously that's got to be something that they're going to consider, you know, just depending on where we sit with this situation. So
it's quite a awkward and situation that we have to be flexible about and see what happens. And I have to do one segue for you. We're talking about you're not going to watch the NBA, and I can't blame you for that. But I don't know if you watched any part of the 96. When I was telling you the 96 is on the sports channel, the 96 Bulls team. And I watched some of the game, even though it's not HD. And here's the thing that I noticed immediately. The intensity of the defense of that playoff games could not believe the difference now between the defense then and the defense in the current NBA, even in the playoffs now. It's a different ball game, and a tense, hard-nosed defense that was played in those playoff games, it's a huge, huge difference to me. And by the way, they called a lot of traveling and charge calls, too, that they don't do anymore.
Yeah, you know, I haven't watched any of those games. I don't have any really real interest in any of that. But
I know
that, and you know that's part of the issue with today's game. I mean, you know, there's no defense. You know, guys travel with the basketball at will and right in front of the refs. You know, and I mean, there's no. You know, there's no real synchronicity to the game. I mean, there's no offense run. You know, you get a guy to drive to the hoop and he puts it to somebody standing at the three-point line or he dunks it.
Yeah.
That's all you're going to get. And then if it's a superstar and he misses, the whistle blows because he was fouled, even if he wasn't fouled.
Right. And I'm wondering if the fans who watch the game now, they're really legitimate NBA fans. Do they know the difference? Or do they think this is how the way – pro basketball should be played?
Yeah, no, you know, this is what the NBA did is they pandered to children because this is what children want to see. They don't want to see passing and, you know, guys cutting to the hoop and getting layups and, you know, all those kind of things. They want to see guys dunk. They want to see guys shoot the three. You know, these are the things they want to see. They want to see the fancy passes. They don't care about the integral portion of about basketball. You know,
no.
What I mean, that's why a lot of them can't stay focused on a sport like baseball, because there's strategy and there's things you have to do as a pitcher to set up a hitter. They don't care about that. They just want to see the guy hit a home run.
Yeah. No more triples. Huh? One of the most exciting plays in baseball. Where you don't see that happen.
More
exciting than a home run.
The game is going to dissolve into you're either going to hit a home run or you're going to strike out, and that's all we're going to get.
Yeah. Do you think the NHL has kind of been pretty consistent in terms of their play as compared to the NBA in terms of defense and a solid game as compared to what the NBA has turned out to be?
Yeah, you know, the humorous thing is in reality, the NHL has made the best changes pretty much out of any league. You know, the overtime becomes very exciting when it's 4-on-4. You know, the ice opens up, there's more action. You know what I mean? The game really starts to flow when that happens. And, you know, they're looking for a way to end games. They don't want to see shootouts because, let's face it, shootouts are boring. So, you know, they've came up with really good and innovative ideas. And the problem is it's the NHL and it just, you know, nobody cares.
Yeah.
You know, the mainstream media care less, and obviously they have the lowest fan base out of the big four sports. And it's just kind of sad because, you know, obviously they're incredibly athletic because they can do things on skates that some people can't do in regular gym shoes.
No.
You know, they're cooper than any other league by far, you know, with the exception, obviously, of like a UFC fighter. You know, and I mean, they just, you know, sadly, it's always kind of looked at as Canada's game and America intrudes on it.
Yeah, I've always thought the referees were the best in the business too, of all the sports.
Yeah,
I thought they were terrific. They're terrific when you compare them to the shall I dare say the NBA referees, who are to me are a disgrace.
Oh gosh, they're easily the worst out of the bunch, you know, but out of any sport, you know, and I, you know, because like I get it, you know, you're gonna miss calls. Umpires are gonna miss calls in baseball. Refs are gonna miss calls in football. I've seen players take four steps in the front of NBA refs and they don't blow the whistle.
Yeah, it's incredible.
You know, it's embarrassing with the way these guys ref games. But you know, that's a directive from the league because it's what fans want. You know, and the NBA goes out of its way to give the fans what they want. And the funny thing about that is when the NFL does that, the media destroys them. You know, don't call the NFL any name they can get under the sun because they're the king and nobody can touch them. But when the NBA does it, nobody says a word about it.
No, that's exactly true.
So it's just kind of, you know, the way it goes. And, you know, and I get it. And, you know, Dan has mentioned it here before. You know, if you're a sports writer, the league you would want to take down is the NFL because they're clearly the number one sport out there. And, you know, if you're the guy who could, you know, finally come up with something against them that stuck, you know, you'd make your career. You wouldn't have to write another article again. You could just live off that article for the rest of your life. So,
well, here's hoping, by the way, that the NFL has a regular season.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that. That's so far down the line. I think everything will be fine and cleared up by then. You know, I'm just having a good time listening to everybody complain about the draft because they're going to continue with it, even though there's absolutely no reason at all that they should cancel it.
Yeah, I know you're sad, though, but there was a news bulletin today that the XFL has officially suspended their operations for the season.
Yeah, you know, I was actually more disappointed to see the fact that they're not quite sure what they're going to do next year.
No, that's right. That's right.
You know, not, I just kind of figured, you know, and especially with them not starting till February, that there really wouldn't be an issue.
Maybe they were disappointed in the attendance, the live attendance, because from what I understand, the crowds are in the 18,000 to 20,000 range, and maybe they expected a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I don't know. Is that really something they could have expected? You know, I mean, I think they did really well for what they had. So,
well, the games certainly were somewhat entertaining, and you think that they're going to actually pull the plug permanently after this season?
Boy, you know, I hope not, because I enjoyed watching the games. You know, it was much better than the AF, which was just a complete joke. So,
and if that's the decision they make, that they're not going to have XFL in 2021, is that the direct result of the virus, or would they have considered that anyway?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously it hurt them. They only ended up playing five games, so they lost some revenue. And, yeah, you just wonder if maybe did they lose enough revenue to that for that to become a big deal?
Yeah, it's
So,
it will be nice to see them come back and try it one more year at least and see if they can sustain some interest next season, but right now we don't know. We don't know if that's going to happen or not.
Yeah, let's hope that they can, they can work something out, and you know, we'll have to see how it goes. But I guess you look at it, clearly, everybody knows they're owned by Vince McMahon. You know, he's in the process of losing a lot of money right now with WWE, because they can't put on any live events. So maybe you got to kind of start to question where he's at financially. And, you know, if it's something that, they might have to, you know, maybe they're going to have to take a year off and come back in, 2022.
Yeah, it's very possible. I know that his stock took a beating. Everybody's stock took a beating, but his even more. So I think it dropped down 60 bucks a share or something like that. Went really way, way, way down. And I'm sure the virus had a lot to do with it.
He lost his biggest North American payday this past weekend when, they did WrestleMania, but they did it in front of nobody. I'm sure he, got some pay-per-view money, because I'm sure there were people who bought it or, subscribed to the WWE Network to pick it up. But, that's a whole weekend event, and they make millions of dollars on that weekend alone. Because I know they have, like, the fan experience where you can meet the wrestlers and, NXT crew show. And then WrestleMania is Sunday, and it's always, 60, 70, 80,000 tickets sold for that. So, the losses just add up.
And I know that they've had some layoffs now in personnel, and I'm wondering if those are going to go to the lower-tier wrestlers as well.
Yeah, well, I know I saw that they finally released that tag team that had wanted out for a while, the Revival.
Right.
And, yeah, you've got to figure anybody who's got a contract coming up, unless you're just essentially needed, is probably out the door. Unless you're just going to take a bargain basement deal to stick around. You got to remember, he just also overpaid to keep a lot of talent because he's got competition now. So they were offering guys a lot more money than normal to keep them around because he was afraid of them turning up in AEW.
Correct.
So, and I know Edge was just one of those guys who came back, even though he's only going to be a part-time wrestler, he's going to be paid a legitimate full-time wrestler salary because there were some talks that AEW was interested in him. I know Randy Orton did the same thing in his contract negotiations. He even posted some stuff on his Twitter feed with the AEW logo in the background before he re-signed. So, both these guys were really smart in their contract negotiations and became, now they're essentially overpaid. I don't know how the guarantees work with their contracts and if they were to be released, what they would have to be paid.
Right.
But, they essentially were both overpaid and, good move on their part and not the best business from, the McMahon family.
Yeah, I'm wondering how long they could keep their TV program going without house shows now. And are they going to continue to show Raw an empty arena every Monday night? And can they get away with it? Or are they going to actually temporarily cease operations until this is all over with?
Yeah, there was talk last week or 2 weeks ago that after WrestleMania, they were going to do the Raw after WrestleMania because it's always a big deal, and it got pretty good ratings compared to what they've been doing. NXT actually just beat AEW for the first time ever in the Wednesday night ratings. And, I know tonight's SmackDown is new, and then they were talking about cutting it off after that. Now, I know they're doing a month more of tapings. They're going to get together in Florida and do some tapings. I was a little surprised by that because I know Florida put that stay-at-home order in, and they didn't think they were going to be able to tape there. Maybe they worked something out with the city. A little money always gets that done. So, yeah, but there was a lot of rumors that they were gonna shut it down, and I don't know if they would have showed replays or older matches or, what they would have done. Because, we're talking about, 6 hours, 7 hours of TV time a week.
Well, they certainly have a lot in the vault that they can pull out. But the casual fan might not be interested in seeing some older matches.
Yeah, that's the thing you would have to wonder. Even if they don't go back that far, how many fans are going to be interested in, say, the 2010 Raw shows? Is anybody going to want to watch that?
Yeah, and it's hard to envision AEW sticking around more than a month or two, because I think they have some shows in the can, but they don't do any house shows anyway, so how can they possibly continue with their payroll?
Well, luckily for them, they're run by the Khan family, and we're talking about a guy who's probably a trillionaire.
Yeah. And
So if they want to continue, he can continue. You know, he's definitely that family is definitely well off enough to continue to go. And I do wonder how many AEW contracts are pay by appearance. You know, like, I'm sure they have their bigger names signed to deals, but some of these people they use, you wonder if they're just on a pay per appearance basis. And,
yeah,
you know, you can save money by, yeah, you know, by bringing them in to do those things.
Yeah, I see they're publicizing. I was going to say they're publicizing that empty arena match, which is kind of amusing for next Wednesday between John Moxley and Jake Hager. Well, it would have to be an empty arena match, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, I laughed. They did that 2 weeks ago at NXT. Triple H got in the ring and cut a promo with two of the wrestlers that are feuding. The two top guys are Johnny something other and Ciampa somebody. Well, I don't know all their names. I'm sorry. I read the results, but I don't remember their names. And he stood there and he goes, "I'm going to go out and find an empty arena. You guys can go in. I'm going to lock the door and then it's over." And all I kept thinking to myself while I was watching this on YouTube was going, "You're standing in an empty arena right now." So, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty amusing when I saw that they're publicizing that big match between Moxley and Jake Hager, who, by the way, is a legitimate tough guy. I mean, he may be a worker in a work sport, but he also, I think he's undefeated in MMA, is he not?
Yeah.
Or UFC,
yeah,
or whatever.
He is an undefeated MMA fighter. So
I wonder how they'll book that match. I was thinking to myself, how are they going to book that match?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, and both those guys are good in the ring as well, so it should be a good match.
I wonder how much time they'll give them. Usually the main event is what? Excluding the entrances, what, 15-20 minutes at most? Is that what they're going to give them, or would they give them extended time?
You know, it depends. I know of, you know, AEW does things a little different, and they, you know, they give their wrestlers, you know, the guys who can deal with it longer, you know, longer work time. So as long as they can put the match together, they might be allowed to go a little longer. You never know.
Yeah, you were emailing me about that one match. I'm trying to remember that they almost went to a time limit draw, but one of them did the job with a minute to go. And I'm wondering if maybe they smart booking would have been something different. When have you ever seen a time limit draw in a wrestling match anymore? And wouldn't that have made more sense?
Well, you know, for that match, I don't think it mattered because it was a really good match.
It was.
You know, those
was.
Two guys beat those two the hell out of each other. So, you know, that one, it was okay. But, yeah, there are some you look at and it's just kind of like, yeah, why didn't they just let that go the rest of the way? So.
I don't know. This goes back a ways. I don't remember if you ever saw that match between Vern Gagne and Ox Baker out of Minneapolis on their hourly show they had years ago. Baker really took it to Gagne. He's a much bigger wrestler than Gagne and dominated 95% of the match. And with maybe 30 seconds to go, he did the job for Gagne, which to me was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, see, they didn't do anything like that. They had a really good physical back-and-forth match.
They did. They did. They actually were good.
I think it went over a little over 18 minutes, almost to the 19-minute mark. So, yeah, you know, and they hit some big stuff. And, you know, that's always the tough part with going to a draw today is these guys hit such giant moves that you have to wonder if it would be believable that a guy lasted through all that stuff.
Yeah, and you notice, of course, that the two guys we're talking about were kind of cruiserweights, right? Would you consider them, by today's standards, the cruiserweight wrestlers? So they can do a lot
actually,
more
by today's
stuff than
these guys. By today's standards, these guys are considered bigger guys because there aren't a lot of true heavyweights anymore. So these guys are, you know, I mean, while they would be cruiserweights in a certain era, you know, now they're looked at as heavyweights.
Yeah, I don't think either one of them made more than 220, 225.
So, no, well, you know, I think the one guy is you know, the one guy, the Trent guy is taller, so he may be 230, 240, because he's probably 6'4", 6'5". So he may carry a little more weight with them. But, you know, I mean, nowadays, everybody does the cruiserweight moves. I mean, even if you're 300 pounds, you do the cruiserweight moves.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
exactly. I find it confusing nowadays if you try to watch these guys that there's so many name changes now. From every time they move from one organization to another, there's a name change.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like, you know, the funny thing, I had a kick out of it the other day. I happened to have the WWE on, and one of the tag teams did the Canadian Destroyer. And the announcers didn't really know what to call it because they weren't going to use Canadian Destroyer because obviously, you know, that would give all the credit in the world to Petey Williams for coming up with this move and, you know, all that. And I think the first time it was used, I don't think they even called it. You know, but then the next time it came up in a match, the other time they finally just started calling it the Destroyer, and I just got such a kick out of it because really they were just incredibly dumbfounded, you know, on the microphone, and it was like, okay, I thought you guys knew what was coming up, and you know, normally Vince McMahon is in their ear talking to him on commentary,
yeah,
and
right.
I guess he didn't have it either. So.
Right. Yeah, it's got to be tough working under those conditions for the announcers when he's yelling and screaming in their ear when they don't call a match the way he wants it to be called.
Well, Taz just did an interview talking about that, and it might have been Chris Jericho's podcast, saying what a nightmare it was to try to call matches because Vince would literally call the moves, and Taz, you know, and Taz is a guy who he's a technical wrestler. You know, he's not a high flyer. And Taz is kind of like, yeah, I know what a drop kick is. I know what an arm drag is. But yet Vince is telling him this in his ear. And he's like, yeah, I know all these things. Why is he going over this with me like I'm an idiot? And I could just imagine the nightmare having to listen to this goof, you know, going ape crazy while you're trying to call a match.
Yeah, that's got to be very difficult to do under those circumstances. You know, you're talking about Vince McMahon and I got to give props to Shane McMahon, his son. Of course, it's a work, but he seems to take a lot of bumps for a guy who's not a trained professional. Or I guess maybe he has some kind of training and some serious stuff he's done when a few times when he has wrestled, and that's got to be dangerous, work or not.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, he, you know, I mean, well, you know, you're looking at a guy who really paid his dues. You know, he did some ring crew work. He was a referee for a little while. You know, so he just didn't walk in and, you know, all of a sudden be put in the front office. He did the, you know, the thing, and I think that helps him, you know, getting respect from the boys. You know, because obviously they know he did all this. You know, he's just not some, you know, guy who wandered in and went, oh, yeah, I'm the son, here I go.
Yeah, and some of that stuff he did is really insane. And you know, one wrong move, and there could be some serious injuries. And that's one thing that's wrong with the sport today, though, I think. It's just too many of these crazy high spots that they do, and that's no wonder there's so many injuries now.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and that's what really makes it hard to watch for me. And, you know, especially like I was mentioning before, you get this match where, you know, a guy hits a move and, you know, he's dead and he kicks out.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, how am I supposed to believe that didn't beat him?
Yeah, that seems to be the trend now,
just,
though, doesn't it?
No way to do it.
All these near falls you see.
Oh, yeah.
Now. And it's not it seems like every organization has these near falls. Oh, it was 2 3/4, but he got out. And how do they do it?
Yeah. You know, and that was one of the things, you know, Ring of Honor started that years back where guys started kicking out, you know, two and three quarters. Oh, I can't believe he got out. You know, that was their thing that just kind of carried over because, you know, the fans get all, you know, would get all excited about a guy barely kicking out. But,
and doesn't destroy the credibility of a finish hold sometimes when they do that?
See, it's weird because that's what I always thought and that's what we were always taught, you know, was you don't kick out of a guy's finisher unless he tells you to, you know, unless it's something you guys worked out. But, you know, apparently not these days because everybody kicks out of everybody's finisher.
Yeah, yeah, and I guess the fans accept it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that kind of seems to be the thing because that's what I always think. You know, I mean, now I'm more surprised when a match ends on a big move like that than I am when a guy kicks out because, everybody kicks out.
Right. Or wouldn't you be shocked now if someone got a figure four leg lock on an opponent and he immediately submitted? When was the last time that happened?
Yeah, well, you know, Cody did get the win with the figure four this week, but I guess it ended in a pinfall. You know,
yeah,
they did
right.
the whole, you know, deal with that. But, yeah, I'm trying, you know, for a while I thought somebody in WWE was using it, not obviously Flair's daughter, but one of the other wrestlers, one of the male wrestlers was using it and getting submissions. But that was a while back now.
And if you figure four on and the opponent didn't submit but was pinned, that has happened before, though, but not very often.
So, yeah, no, it doesn't it is rare to see, you know, guys get pinned out of that. But, you know, I mean, it's possible. You know, the key is, you know, they always say you pass out from the pain.
Right,
so,
exactly.
But,
in the old days,
you know,
the old days they used to be to have the double backdrop finish when it looks like one opponent's going to win, but his shoulders are also down on the mat, and the referee sees his shoulders down instead of his opponent. And this is how Buddy Rogers, for example, won a few matches. I remember him beating Bearcat right that way. It looked like he won the match, but no. Both his shoulders down at the same time, and you know the referee's going to count down.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I just thought they did that double pinfall finish somewhere. I saw the highlight of it. I think it was TNA just did one.
Oh, recently?
Like a few weeks ago. So it's funny you brought it up because I did just see it. They did it with that Eddie Edwards and Michael Elgin where the two refs couldn't figure out who pinned who. So yeah, they used it there, but there was no winner. But hey, look at that. Wow, we're out of time already. Will the music play?
Oh, the
music is on the back. You know the deal while we're gone. Don't tell me you're about to have a thing with someone over there. Put the link, follow over to the Facebook page. Give that a like. You want to know what I'm Don't forget to put it to you on Sports Fan Radio. You can look me up on Twitter as well. I'm at TrumpTime.com/TURCEINE. I'm going to say, thank you for listening to this one. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. But if you did miss us on the moment, head on over to TuneIn.com. You can listen whenever you want.